You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Marvin Boyer and Ed Angelo. This is the third program I've done now in the past 5 or 6 months that is into the issue of criminal justice. This is an issue that's, I hate to put it in such economic terms, but, you know, if people don't understand this issue from a human term, maybe they might understand it from an economic case. And that is that today we have supposedly a full employment economy, and yet we have millions of people in jail, hundreds of thousands, we'll get closer to the number. But there are far too many people in jail. There are far many too many people who are essentially wasted human capital in our society. And so maybe we can get to people to thinking about this issue under those terms if they're not so willing to think about it under the basic human terms. But crime is a tough issue. This is tonight we're talking about incarceration, how we deal with people who have been affected by crime and have committed crime. And I've got two people who are especially important to this issue here in the Lehigh Valley and know the issue as well as anybody does. And I'm going to start with Marvin Boyer. Marvin Boyer is a household name in the Easton area. His family has been very active in civil rights issues and economic justice issues for many years. Marvin is a former Walgreens executive who did a lot of work at Walgreens, and now he's spending his time and his expertise fighting the issue of justice in the criminal justice system. Marvin Boyer, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's good to be here, and I'm very passionate about this subject, and thanks for the invitation in terms of being part of this discussion.
Glad to have you. Ed, you're a lawyer. You've spent about a million years defending people.
Feels that way, yes.
Yeah, people who the system doesn't like a whole lot in most cases. They tend to have some kind of a bias of one sort or another. Why aren't you doing tax law or estate planning or mergers and acquisitions?
Well, that's all very boring stuff to begin with. I would never want to go in that direction. I became a lawyer to help people, and I don't think there's any more help needed than in the criminal justice system, especially right now.
Was there an incident in your life? Were you ever arrested? You ever been in the criminal justice system yourself?
I have not been arrested. I've had family members who have been involved. And, I think I've been sympathetic to people who have been arrested because they usually come from meager circumstances, and I come from meager circumstances myself. And while I've been lucky enough to skirt the system, some of the people in my family haven't been that lucky.
All right. Marvin, what gets you into this one?
Well, what got me involved was initially my involvement coming out of being retired and looking to be involved in nonprofit
work. You're awfully young to be retired.
Well, thank you.
That's unfair.
No sweeter sound than the sound of praise, so to say. But moving on, what got me involved was a lifelong commitment to social justice causes and recommitting to involvement with the NAACP when I retired, and I was appointed as political action chair. And initially, I put together a program on gerrymandering, working with the League of Women Voters. Subsequently, the League had mentioned, why don't we look to work on a criminal justice program? I put together a forum as it relates to criminal justice and the injustices that are related to those folks that are usually adversely impacted, and that's the low-income folks and people of color. So subsequently, working initially with the League of Women Voters, we met with various officials in Northampton County and other groups and trying to get a little bit more education and sense of where we want to go. Of course, when you talk about criminal justice, there are so many subsets that you could deal with. And that was the challenge as far as what to do moving forward. And as we progressed, we started this going back to 2018, starting to meet and formulating our plans. And as we moved down the road and working on these the criminal justice ideas, what we wanted to do, we brought on other other partners. We brought on the ACLU. We brought on the End Mass Incarceration Group of Lehigh Valley. We brought on men like Ed Angelo and people like yourself, CACLD, getting involved. Absolutely. And that, you know, I can't overemphasize the necessity of bringing on partners and working collaboratively on issues like this. I think it definitely impacts on, gives it has a strong, in some cases, a profound impact on the outcome of these types of issues.
So in the interest of full disclosure, I just want to make sure that we're clear with the people listening. And you know, my opinion is the smartest radio listeners in Lehigh Valley are listening to this radio station. WDIY has, you know, it's NPR. Locally, and it is the station, I think, where people most interested in what's going on in their world are tuning in. Have you ever been in the criminal justice system?
I myself, no. I have never been affected in terms of incarcerated, no.
All right, so let me just say, in the interest of full disclosure, I have been arrested 3 times in my life, 2 as a minor, 1 as an adult. The incident as an adult was I got caught stealing Christmas trees from my fraternity when I was in college, and it put me in the criminal justice system. I was charged with what sounded to me like something around Dennis the Menace. It was called criminal mischief. I thought that was such a cool thing to be charged with, criminal mischief. And I was with two girls, women at the time, whose fathers were both lawyers, and they copped this attitude with the cops, and you know, you don't do that once you get caught. They catch you. You better be yes sir, no sir, and whatever mm-hmm. you say, sir, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And so we all got the book thrown at us, and I got this little nick on my record. The two minor infractions had to do with marijuana, which is now legal for better than half the population, and so I think that that's something I can freely admit and pass off on as a bad law in the first place. Ed, let's get back to you just for a moment. In the public, in the defense of criminals, how many people do you think you've worked with and for?
Thousands over the years. I was in the public defender's office for 3 years, and you know, probably 1,000 people right there. But been doing this for 34 years. I also wanted to add that while I've never been incarcerated, and I think Marvin can say the same sort of thing. It doesn't mean that I didn't do anything wrong. Part of the problem is that there is a Russian roulette aspect to criminal justice. You get lucky. You do things wrong. Smoking pot, you mentioned, and theft and things like that. I've done wrong, and I've been lucky enough not to get caught.
Right.
A lot of other people haven't been so lucky. I think the color of my skin has a lot to do with that.
Now, I was going to say, I think you and Marvin might have a little different experience. And you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been on the highway and I've seen somebody pulled over, and I thought, well, there's another family guilty of driving while black.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, well, in the interest of transparency and full disclosure, we have something in common. In my younger years, I stole the Christmas tree as well. I didn't get caught, though.
Oh, really?
And other small infractions, and luckily I didn't get caught. But again, I've been guilty of the fact of driving while black in terms of getting
pulled over. And
I've been pulled over and asked, and one of the things I've always done, and I've told family members, I told my brother, I told my grandson, I've told nephews, if in fact you get stopped, this be respectful. Yes, officer, what can I do for you? What's the problem?
Keep your hands on the steering wheel.
Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Don't cop an attitude, because that's going to create a problem.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
The new book, what's it called? I mean, new movie, Slim, Queen and Slim? It's a new movie about a roadside incident like that. Mm-hmm. The guy ends up in a fight. The cop gets shot. I mean,
right.
And they go on the run. I mean, this is very, very timely.
Right. Don't give an officer an excuse to, because we all have those biases, you know, unconscious biases, and generally that's what's going on with a lot of white officers that are stopping. You know, they're going to. Come to some conclusions based upon the color of skin, and then if you give them an opportunity to validate those conclusions, bam, game.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've been in so many situations where I was in the presence of a person of color, and we'd be doing something, and I'd do whatever I did, and that person say, "I can't believe you got away with that."
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you automatically mm-hmm. see the difference between black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people that look like me understand that at all. You know,
right.
I think. I mean, there's the new form of racism is denying that there is racism in our society, right?
Absolutely.
You know, there are all these people who say, I mean, I think their attitude is, you know, I don't own a slave. Why are you blaming me? They don't understand how systematic and how systemic mm-hmm. racism really is in our society in so many different ways. It's present in my mind in land use planning. I mean, if you have a minimum lot size of a half acre, that's obviously designed to keep certain people out.
Right.
Ed, how have you seen race manifest itself in your work?
Well, I mean, you have situations beginning at where a person would get arrested in some instances and have to go for preliminary arraignment for bail. I think people of color tend to fall into that category more. A white person, particularly if you take someone like myself, older white person.
Yeah, but you have a beard.
With a beard, well, yeah, that's true. That could be a problem. But aside from that, it's more likely I'm not going to wind up having a problem at the very beginning of a case, maybe not even have to post bail, maybe not even go for a preliminary arraignment. It gets handled perhaps differently. Whereas if you're a young person, just generally a young person, and then even worse, a young black person, and then even worse, a young poor black person from a particular zip code where, you know, arrests are much higher than in a more affluent zip code. I often tell people, I live outside of Quakertown. I see police cars every once in a blue moon, and I think it's because one of the state troopers lives down the road. I think I see the same guy over and over again. But if I'm in the city in Allentown, I see police cars all the time. And, you know, that's not saying anything bad about the police. It's just if you're going to have more police, you're going to have more arrests.
Right.
You're going to have behavior in that area that's going to be seen, whereas where I live, my aberrant behavior is not going to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we are really, as a society, sort of incarceration fixed, you know. Critics call it, as you said earlier, there's the group based in Allentown called End Mass Incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can whistle past the proverbial graveyard and pretend that we are safer because we're locking people up. But the fact is 90% or more of those people that go to jail are going to get out, right?
Correct.
So they're going to come back out. There's no denying that. When they come back out, are they coming back out better off? Absolutely.
We can't lock our way up to a better society. And the years have shown that. In the 90s, there was a big rush to, you know, with the enactment of certain legislation aimed at incarcerating more people, it just didn't work. And what we're seeing is no change in terms of the incarceration rates. I mean, we are 5% of the world population, yet we lock up 25% of those folks that are incarcerated.
We're 5% of the world's population.
The world's
population. Yeah, 25% of the world's inmates are
incarcerated
in American jails.
Yeah, yep. United States, correct. And here in Pennsylvania alone, where the minority, the black population specifically, is in the neighborhood of 13%, we're incarcerating approximately 48% of those folks that are incarcerated are African American.
And so you take the male out of the household, you take the male out of the neighborhood, what is the, and with the intent, you know, as people, you know, genuinely think we're gonna at least get them out, if not fix them. What do they leave behind, though? What's the void that they leave behind? Because that's something that
Well, the collateral damage, and that's the problem, and that seems to be the issue, and that's something that we have learned in terms of when we started these forums on criminal justice. And what is the collateral damage in terms of those folks that are incarcerated that can't afford bail, and generally those folks are low income that can't afford bail, even nominal bail. The collateral damage is they lose their job. They could lose an apartment. They could lose ties with family members. That has an impact on the society. And it just doesn't work in terms of making things better.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the collateral damages continue. It's not just at the time that a person is arrested.
Correct.
Even after someone, let's just say, for argument's sake, is justifiably convicted, they have collateral damages in terms of cost. There's the collateral damage of being, if you're a felon. In fact, I wanted to point out incarceration rates, which you both explained very well. We're at now 2.2, 2.3 million people incarcerated. It's important to note it wasn't always that way. You go back to 1970, we had approximately 200,000 people behind bars. Importantly, that's a number that was, you know, what was it, stable from 1920 to 1970. We were in that range of 200,000. Suddenly, we balloon up over the last 50 years to 2.2 million. I just read a startling statistic that felony convictions, because you're talking about collateral consequences, have increased 500% since 1970. So there you have the person who's labeled with the proverbial scarlet letter of F in this case, who can't get the job, maybe is denied financial aid, maybe can't get any other kind of benefits that he might need, federal benefits. I think food stamps, you can't get food stamps, I believe, if you're a felon. There's all kinds of collateral consequences. I want to tell your listeners, a good book I just started is called A Pound of Flesh. It's a very good book. I'm only about 20 pages into it because there's so much, so chock full of the detriments that we're talking about. But it's a big problem.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings, hosting Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guests tonight are Ed Angelo, who is a defense attorney and noted defense attorney. And we also have Marvin Boyer, who is a member of the NAACP in Easton and has been leading an effort among community groups try to tackle this issue. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. In full disclosure, I've been working with these guys myself, been involved with a group called The Color of Justice. That was a very deliberate title that we picked for the group. And we're working on these issues, and there's room for lots of people to be part of this effort as well. We're at a point where we're going to need to take a break in just a little bit. Let's be sure that we talk about solutions at some point, because, you know, there's so much to talk about on the downside of this equation. You know, we ought to talk at some point about what do we got to do to fix it.
Absolutely.
It drives me nuts when people complain and they don't do anything to solve the thing that they're complaining about. And people in my family are like that, and it drives me out of my mind. So we need to fight these battles as much as we can. Again, I'm Alan Jennings, hosting Lehigh Valley Discourse. Stick around. We're going to take a very quick break. Hope you'll see us on the other side.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, everybody's favorite public radio station. I'm Alan Jennings, your host for this evening. My guest, Ed Angelo, a lawyer who does defense work. Marvin Boyer, activist with the NAACP. Former executive in the private sector. Marvin has been a leader in many ways, and his family beyond Marvin has been like royalty in Easton community. Okay, so we have the highest incarceration rate in the world. Why do you think we have? Why is that? Why would a country that holds itself up as the beacon of opportunity and justice and all that, why would this country have such a high incarceration rate?
Part of it, I guess, goes back to the 70s, and that's when the spike really seemed to take off in the late 70s with drugs, when we started to incarcerate folks for drug offenses. In fact, the incarceration since 1980 jumped 790%. But the latest statistics and statistical information based upon 2013, that is a tremendous explosion in terms of incarceration. When you even break that down across the board as it relates to even Pennsylvania, over 50% of the folks here in Pennsylvania are incarcerated for either a drug and or a mental health issue. So
those are the reasons they get incarcerated.
Those are generally.
Or those are problems that they have.
Well, mental health is a problem. Generally, there's a correlation between drug abuse, drug issues, and mental health. Sometimes they go hand in hand. Sometimes they don't. With the closing of the Allentown State Hospital, officials will say that there has been an exponential increase in incarcerations because our local jails and sometimes our state prisons are used to warehouse these folks because there is just not the resources.
And you just brought up the mental health and no facilities, the facilities being closed down. There's a long explanation for that. In the 60s, Supreme Court decisions came down stating that people were being being put in mental health institutions and forgotten about and often put in there just for being like incorrigible in their behavior when they were teenagers and stuff like that.
Incorrigible, man, that would put me in jail.
Yeah, no kidding, we'd all be in jail. But I just read a figure that we have about 356,000 seriously mentally ill people in our prisons and jails. And strikingly, that's about 10 times more than we now have in our state mental hospitals. Mm. So that indicates, and this is a unique idea of mine, this has been written about widely, we have used our jails as the default treatment centers mm-hmm. for mentally ill.
But we don't do any treatment in those jails, do we?
No. I mean, there's medications. I've had clients talk about, I don't want to take the medications. I kind of doze off and I zone and I don't want to do that. And they'll decline to take the medications. You know, there's all kinds of problems surrounding that. But there's other numbers. If we talk about, let's say, not a person who is severely schizophrenic, we have about 70-80% of people behind bars for things like severe depression, mood disorders and things like that. These aren't people who can't keep a job, but they do have problems that often precipitate the conduct that winds them up in prison.
So I'm assuming, and maybe this is not a fair assumption, but I'm assuming people want people locked up so they're going to be safer. Are people safer now that we've locked up, a huge percentage of the American population, most of whom are people of color?
Well,
I mean, is there any evidence that those like mandatory sentences have had any positive effect?
If anything, our experience, at least my experience in being involved with this over the past few years, the evidence doesn't overwhelmingly show that locking folks up is reducing our crime rates.
It increases it.
Yes.
It does.
We have a number of folks that are incarcerated also who cannot afford bail, which is another issue. And one of the things we decided to address with the Color of Justice program, we talked about there are so many subsets of criminal justice reform, but we decided to focus on three specifically. That was bail, the effects of incarceration, and reentry. And bail, it was just interesting to find when we looked at that, when we put that under the microscope, so to speak, the number of folks, when you're accused of a crime in our system, you're innocent until proven guilty. But how many people are incarcerated because they cannot afford bail? And I talked about that earlier in our discussion about the adverse effects, the collateral damage of being incarcerated when you can't even afford nominal bail.
Yeah, even 2 or 3 days in jail. And this is us talking. This is the study showing this. 2 or 3 days in jail can just, you know, right. upturn a person's life,
oh my God,
lose their job, lose their home, become estranged from their wives, their children. It has detrimental effects. And, you know, if only it were just 2 or 3 days. In many cases, people are sitting because they can't make bail. They're sitting for months until their case wends its way through the system.
So who at what level of government does a decision like bail get made? I mean, is that at the court level? Is it a county policy issue? Is it a state policy? Is it a federal?
Great question.
I mean, ostensibly, it's made initially by a district justice. It could be adjusted later on by a common pleas judge. But I think more importantly, it's a systemic, I call it a problem, a systemic problem that really needs to be addressed at the state level. We need legislation. New Jersey now has done away with cash bail through legislation. There's some promising evidence coming out about that it is working. Philadelphia has done something unique that I would challenge our district attorneys in the Lehigh Valley to do. In fact, I'm sorry, Judge Morganelli, former district attorney Morganelli, already has declared that he would oppose cash bail for misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. That would be a tremendous start.
Absolutely.
If Attorney Martin would follow that, I think that would be fantastic.
But that decision can be made at the local level. You don't have to have some blessing from the state, right?
Well, by and large, yes, that's true. Yeah, because, a district attorney can do that.
State government is really ineffective these days. I mean, they don't seem to do anything anymore.
Here's a fact. In the United States, 60% of inmates in local jails are awaiting trial. The cost of locking up people who are presumed innocent in the eyes of the law, you know, that's tremendous, 60%. And locally, here's another fact. We have, 45% of the folks in one of our local jails that are in jail for less than 10 days because they can't make bail.
Yeah, and you know, people are going to get sick of hearing me say this, but I've referred to Mr. Weinstein, the one who's in for rape.
Epstein.
Yeah, okay. He's in.
Jeff Epstein.
He was able to post $1 million bail within hours and get free on rape charges.
Reach into his pocket.
And I have clients who, you know, metaphorically speaking, spit on the sidewalk and they wind up in jail and they can't afford a few hundred bucks to get out.
Yeah.
Just wrong.
Well, so, you know, as I was saying before the break, you know, there are way too many problems in our society that people are just content complaining about and never do anything about. I hate that. And I, you know, when I complain about stuff, I spend a lot of time trying to find ways to fix it. So let's talk about this color of justice effort. Go ahead.
With the color of justice, it kind of organically grew as it relates to bringing on other partners, other organizations, and it really kicked off around this time last year, December of last year. We initially met with, and I'll talk a little bit more about this as we go on, with local judge Craig Daly, and he talked to us about his drug treatment and mental health court in Northampton County, which was a pioneer type of thing here locally, and it has had some positive effects. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of our folks that are incarcerated either have over 50% of mental health and or a drug or alcohol issue. So his court in Northampton County addresses that specifically. We thought that was very important in terms of education, and that's what the color of justice was about. Putting on a series of forums, and we started in March. What we had, when we put on this program, we had 10 partners, roughly. I had mentioned CACLV, yourself. I had mentioned Ed Angelo and other organizations, the local chapters of the NAACP, including the East End, Bethlehem, and Allentown, and mass incarceration, ACLU, and others, to name a few.
Faith groups.
And faith groups, absolutely. And we started off with a kickoff luncheon and on March the 11th, where we invited and he accepted. That was the State Attorney General Shapiro, and it was a good kickoff event.
Sold out house.
I think there was about 170 plus people that showed up for the event that we held at on Lehigh campus. And we subsequently had three forums that we focused in on bail, which we thought was very important to talk about because it does have negative effects on those people of color and low income. We talked about the effects of incarceration. That was our second forum where we had the Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections, John Wenzel, come in and speak. In our third forum, we talked about reentry, and that's where the rubber meets the road. Because after folks are incarcerated, how are we preparing them, if in fact we are preparing them, to reenter society and be productive citizens?
So what's the strategy now? I mean...
Okay. Well, the strategy at that time was education, and the responses we got with these forums was strong. It was heartwarming, for lack of any other word, in the sense of to see the amount of concern and responses that we got at these forums. So moving forward, once you energize folks and you excite them, the question is, where do you go from here?
Yeah, it's like the dog catches the
right.
car.
What do we do next?
Yeah, if I can pick up from there, we are going to replicate in Allentown this series of forums. And yes, to continue the education piece that Marvin was talking about, but we also are going to try to move now towards solutions. You know, what can be done. Not that we didn't talk about solutions during those previous forums, but now we're going to focus more on solutions. And there are many, and they're not being utilized. We have a situation, we have a pattern to follow, too. Judge Dowley and other people, I'm sure, in Northampton County have provided, I think, a roadmap for us. I think we need to have drug court in Lehigh County, mental health court. You know, there are 45 counties in Pennsylvania that now have drug court, including Carbon, Bucks, Berks.
Talk about what is a drug court?
Well, drug court is, I've watched Judge Boylan down in Bucks County closely and Judge Dowley. I remember being in her courtroom kind of stuck. That's how I felt initially. But it was great because I watched what she did and how she dealt with people. And I would say it's blending compassion, help, and, you know, holding people's feet to the fire, too, because people came before her, defendants came before her, and, you know, if they were messing up, she called them on it. But yet, it wasn't, okay, cuff them and put them back in jail. It was an exploration of what the problem was at that moment for that person, and she dealt with it. It's a great, I think, device for helping people and de-emphasizing just throwing them in jail, which doesn't help anything. It really doesn't.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, in other words, too, with the drug and alcohol court going in front of Judge Dowley, rather than incarcerate them, he might direct them to a program, which is a very detailed program involving some weeks, and they even have a graduation when they come out. And on the other hand, the mental health court, an individual, when they go in front of the judge, they may be directed because of their state of their mind, what have you, to the mental health component.
Yeah, let me be quick to say, too, Lehigh County doesn't have mental health court. I think they should. They do have what's called MISA, and it is an excellent program. And I've said this to anyone who will listen. It's an excellent program. We can even use it as a model, but it needs to be expanded. The mental health problem, as we've described it, as it pertains to incarceration, is far more extensive than MISA can handle. There needs to be things done at the beginning of a case and more extensive efforts.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings. My show tonight is the third I've now done on criminal justice-oriented issues. Tonight, my guests are Ed Angelo, who has spent his career doing heroic work on behalf of people who have been accused. In other words, he's a defense attorney. Marvin Boyer, whose career was in the private sector, making tons of money, and while Ed and I were toiling, you know, making nothing, doing God's work, Marvin's out there making tons of bucks. But he's at least now, you know, giving back
he's
to
back.
Our society.
He's back.
You know, I'm joking, Marvin, because your family has been truly great, you know, for a long time.
We had the government cheese when we were kids, and we benefited from welfare programs. So I definitely have a soft spot being there myself, coming from there myself, living in the project. So I'm a believer that you give back.
Yeah. You know, I think if we were all going to be honest, we'd all admit we're all liberals. But what I think is unusual about criminal justice is that there's not such an obvious difference between the parties on some of this stuff anymore. I mean, Craig Daly is a Republican. Now, the secret of Craig Daly is that he grew up a Democrat, knew he couldn't get elected as a locally without, you know, with those credentials, switched to Republican, was a very easy guy to work with when he was in the state house. Now he's gone to the courts and he has been the innovator and what many might call done liberal activity. So, you know, don't assume that if a person is a Republican on this issue, that they're not going to be, you know, with the Democrats who think we're all right and never wrong about these things.
No, I should say many people from what we can call the right, conservatives, mm-hmm. what have you, are all about doing criminal justice reform. And this is bipartisan to a great degree.
There's a national wave.
Yeah, and theoretically, you should be able to save money by emptying out, you know, some
lots,
of these jail cells.
Lots of money. In fact, if I may use that as a segue, there's a great article that was written around, I think, 2005 by Malcolm Gladwell about Million Dollar Murray. Mr. Murray was a former Marine, and I should interject, we're not taking care of our veterans either
right.
in terms of the criminal justice system. Yeah. They get thrown in jail just like anybody else, and they deserve more compassion. Mr. Murray, the article says we spent $1 million on him as a society, hence the title of the article. And for much, much less, we could have helped him and at the same time avoided spending all that money. He was an alcoholic. He had mental health issues. He was a bit of a brawler. He got himself into trouble. He was beloved in the community. The cops loved him. The EMTs loved him. The hospital people loved him. He became a fixture in that community in Reno, Nevada. And what he lacked, though, was compassionate. So it was always compassion. What always happened was it had to be like an emergency situation before anybody jumped in to even deal with Mr. Murray. And, you know, he was at one point, I think this is very telling, at one point he was put into a program and he was very successful in that program. He got sober. He got a job. He was doing terrific. Guess what happened? The program ended. Mm. Funding stopped. And that points out the problem. We can talk about it more.
Yeah.
Okay, we've come on to our next break time. This is a very brief break. Stick around. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. We're talking about criminal justice reform. Stay with us.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I get to do this once a month. I have a lot of fun doing it, even though we're dealing with tough issues. There are lots of good people in this community that care about the problem-solving process. I've got two of them with me in the studio. I also have with me in the studio, actually, I'm with him, and that's Neil Heaver, who has easily been the point person, I think, over the years that's made WDIY happen and sustained all these years. So, Neil, thanks for helping me not make a complete fool out of myself when I host these radio shows. Something of a fool, but hopefully not a complete fool. So, Million Dollar Murray, let's talk about where the solutions might lie.
Yeah, well, let me pick up real quickly. That was one story of probably millions. I think we have 3 million people living on the street in this country, which itself hardly makes us great, as people want to think. We're becoming great again. It's not happening. It's not happening locally. It's not happening statewide or nationally. We are not taking care of people who need to be taken care of. Yep. And a lot of the people who wind up in the prison system start out as people on the street. What can we do? I mean, I can throw out dozens of examples if we had time. I'll give you a couple quick ones. RAND Corporation, highly respected entity, did a study showing that if we just give quality education to people who are coming out of our prisons or while in prison, it will cut recidivism rate, in other words, people reoffending, by 43 to 48%. Minneapolis has a program of people who are being trained while in the prisons and jails who come out, 58% reduction in recidivism. And again, I can go on and on. We have a short period of time here, but there's definitely solutions, but we're not availing ourselves of them. We're taking the quick, easy, million-dollar Mary solution of just throwing people in jail. And they come back out and they reoffend within 3 years. They're back in jail.
Well, we're going to get into what the Color of Justice agenda is just a moment. But is there anything that's an obvious change that needs to occur at the federal level? Let's start at the federal level and come down. Is there anything that needs to occur at the federal level that would be a major help in getting some of this done right?
Well, that's a great question.
I have a quick answer as far as the Pell Grants are concerned, which there is indications they're going to be coming back. I'm a liberal. Yes, I am. But I'm also conservative in many ways, and I believe in personal responsibility.
I'm with you.
I believe in lifting yourself by your bootstraps, but you got to have bootstraps. Mm-hmm. We've taken them away. And interestingly, another liberal, I suppose, Bill Clinton, in 1994 was instrumental in taking away Pell Grants for people who were in prison. People who were thriving with these grants suddenly had them taken away, and we need them back. I think they're going to come back, and I think that they can help people who are in prisons. So it's not always a liberal or a conservative who is the enemy of progress.
By the way, by today's standards, Nixon is probably a liberal, so,
it's all relative.
You know, isn't that ironic?
Marvin, any federal policy that you think, that comes to mind that you think is something that's an obvious change item?
There is a national wave. We have a celebrity, Kim Kardashian, who worked with President Trump in getting legislation passed that did have an effect on folks that were incarcerated. So that was a positive thing. And in terms of politically, Kardashian and Trump were worlds apart, but they came together in terms of this legislation that had a positive effect on
Second Chance Act, right?
The act that was signed by President Trump. So that had a positive effect in getting folks released from incarceration, from prison.
What about the state level?
On the state level, and again, one of the things that came out and that kind of resonated with me when we did the our incarceration piece and reentry piece is the amount of people that are on probation. Nationally, there are 7 million people that are on probation. We have more folks of color that are on probation than we had slaves in 1860. And that was a really profound fact that kind of hit me. So going back to your question, Alan, relative to state legislation, and that was one of the things that came out of the Color of Justice, the education piece. What's the next step? The next step is how can we influence or how can we become better educated in those statutes or those pending bills specifically, not statutes because they're not yet, but on the pending legislation on the state level that will have a strong effect, a profound effect on the things that we are educating people. Probation specifically, House Bill 1555. This bill provides for certain reforms and shortening probationary periods. Back in October, a group of us went out to Harrisburg to, in essence, lobby with legislators.
A busload, 50 plus
folks went out to Harrisburg to lobby with different legislators. One of the legislators and supporters of this bill, in fact, authors of the bill, Jordan Harris with the Black Caucus, met with him. And he feels strong.
Philadelphia area,
that this bill will be passed and become law. He felt optimistic enough to say this month it's going to happen. But probation is an area where We have folks, and this is kind of very loose example, they may be incarcerated for a year. They come out and they got maybe 3 or 4 years of probation, and the probation restrictions are really tough. If they violate that probation, and that could be with a dirty urine, they could be resentenced to prison or jail for another year or 2 years. The reality of it is when people come out of jail, they make mistakes. Should they be reincarcerated for those mistakes? No. Right. Should the probation periods be shortened? Yes. And that's one of the bills. Another is House Bill 497, which limits solitary confinement. Again, it's considered inhumane to have people confined in a solitary situation.
Plus, not only is it inhumane, but I think it's been now researched that it is. It doesn't have the effect that was desired.
I mean, no, it makes mentally ill people more mentally ill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It makes young kids who might be prone to violence more violent. It's inhumane. I'm not really kidding. I'm serious about this. I talked about having a carpenter, make up the kind of solitary confinement cell, and take it to Harrisburg and let the legislators just spend 10 minutes each in that little chamber.
That's a good idea.
And I think
they
changed their mind about solitary confinement. It's inhumane. Back to what Marvin was saying about probation and parole, it's clear the studies show, first of all, we're putting too many people in on probation and parole violations for too long a period of time. And these studies also show that it creates more crime. The longer you keep someone in jail, the more likely they are to commit another crime for a number of reasons. You know, the associations they make in prison, the opportunities that they lose out in society, the general deterioration of their mental health and even their physical health. It's just not a good place to go. And other places are doing it differently. And we're probably going to present at our next forum what other nations are doing.
So I think a thoughtful person would follow up that with the question of what then should we be doing? I mean, somebody gets to the point where they're needing to be corralled that way. Something has to change here. And the question is, how do you get that? They're called correctional institutions for a theoretical reason that don't necessarily always apply. So what do we do if solitary confinement is a failed option?
Well, solitary confinement would be more for misbehavior while you're in the prison. But if your general question is, what should we do instead of putting people in prison?
No. What should we do instead of,
instead of solitary confinement?
Yeah, what? Give them a book to read? I don't know. That's a problem.
And that's a great question. I don't know that I have the answer. What I can say, and what is the reason for this bill, is that we have found that solitary confinement has had adverse effects on an individual's mental health. So we do know, and what generated this bill is that it's not working. So we have to come up with an alternative means of dealing with folks who are incarcerated.
This gets into theory now, but the question is, and this is a question that I have to wrestle with every day, is what you take two people raised in the same home, same environment, same opportunities, same love, and one goes astray and the other one goes straight. What is it that we need to do to get that person and in the right direction, so that what is the positive reinforcement that is going to work in these situations? Because if we could solve that problem, I think we solve a huge part of the human
condition.
Yeah, but Alan,
I don't want to leave the inference standing there of your example. It's not about John and Joe from the same affluent family, and John goes south and Joe does great.
Well,
it's not about the zip code. It's about where you grow up. Sure, there's aberrations. There's rich kids who go awry, and there's kids who grow up with nothing and do particularly well and don't get incarcerated. But by and large, it's zip codes. It's poor people who don't have the things that we all take for granted that have allowed us to progress in life, education, good housing, even food. And we have like 1 out of 5 children going to sleep at night in this country, this great country, I put that in quotation marks, because they don't have enough to eat, food insecurity, malnutrition. We have it in this country. So, I mean, lack of opportunity, not this anomaly of one kid, you know, not taking advantage of the advantages he's been given.
If I could respond to that as well, you know, your question, Alan, what do we do as it relates to solitary confinement? I don't have a great answer other than to say a lot of the folks that are incarcerated, in fact, over 50% in Pennsylvania are incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. Are those folks being subjected to solitary confinement, maybe, as Ed said, as a form of punishment? Solitary confinement, I know, is used as a form of punishment. Should it be something that should be curtailed or maybe even compressed? Yes. Is it something that is eliminated? I don't know. However, the issue as it relates to solitary confinement is, are those folks that are confined in a solitary condition indefinitely. That's inhumane. Yeah.
And for what? And for what? I mean,
right.
You know, you sass a corrections officer back, you know, should that be something that should throw you in solitary confinement? I think it should be something pretty egregious that we even consider solitary confinement, but I'm for abolishment of it. I don't think it should occur at all.
So, okay, I run a nonprofit, right?
Okay.
And, you know, like you, I consider myself liberal in many ways, but, or I think Ed, you were, but I've got some pretty conservative elements to me. But for me,
here,
the issue is, what do we have to do to get people's behavior to change? And so punishment normally is not what makes a parent a good parent. A good parent provides incentives. They provide inducements, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, instead of putting somebody in solitary confinement, why don't we say, look, if you don't do this stuff, you'll get, steak and lobster. If you do these things, you're going to get, you know, gruel. I mean, there are things that we can do.
And that's a great point. And I think that comes to also that the folks the correction officers, the administrative folks that are dealing with the incarcerated inmates, treating them, and I'm not saying they don't, but in some cases it's needed, treating them more with respect, more with dignity. And also what I've seen in my involvement on a prison board is more training, and I've seen that happening, and I think that's very important. The training with the COs, with the correctional officers, on how to interact with an individual who has mental health issues, with an individual who has drug issues, knowing how to recognize that and knowing how to treat that, or knowing how to, not so much treat it, how to respond and get that individual the necessary treatment and or help. And I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, and you mentioned mental health, and I think we have to keep that in mind, that probably most people who wind up in solitary confinement are exhibiting behavior that is due to mental illness. And well, what happens in a mental hospital? I don't think they just throw them into a little room and keep them there on weeks or months on end.
Right.
So maybe that's where we can learn the answer to the question, the humane answer to the question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a program, for example, that works with Easton high school kids to try to get kids of color to be more likely to go to college, right? Mm-hmm. The data that we have is that 79% of suburban kids take the SAT, 8% of Latino kids take the SAT, 4% of African-American kids take the SAT. We got a problem there, and that doesn't sound like something that's that difficult to fix.
Right,
in this program, we will match the savings that kids accumulate when they have jobs. If they save money, we'll match their savings and give it to them to take with them to their college.
That's incentive.
Yeah, you know, right. So it seems to me that our whole system is punitively oriented and not positively oriented. You know, what can we do to make it easy for, I mean, when they enter jail, maybe we should say, look, if you do this, 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 and this, you can get out here. If you do less than that, you're going to get a longer term, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to go too far afield here, but education is so important. And right now we have litigation pending, not us, but there's litigation pending. I think trial is going to begin this coming summer on fair funding. Mm-hmm. And right now, if you take Allentown as an example,
you maybe
can address Easton, Marvin, but Allentown is chronically in debt. Yeah. And that's in a school system where kids aren't getting everything they need. No fault of the teachers or administrators. Yeah. you know, it takes money for some things. Right. And, you know, reading is a good example. The instruction in reading, you know, you shouldn't be relying on volunteers from the community. It should be done within the school itself. So I think that would be a starting point. Let's make our schools better. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Parkland rated like maybe 9 out of 10, and you have Allentown rated 1 out of 10. Right. There's something wrong there.
Yeah, you bet. Marvin, what else was on the state legislative agenda that you were mentioning?
Well, the other thing was the Pennsylvania Dignity Act. And one of the educational pieces or learning pieces for us coming out of the Color of Justice forums was the increase in the number of women that are incarcerated in local jails or prisons. And the Pennsylvania Dignity Act is a package of 8 bills that addresses some basic needs that in a number of cases haven't been addressed as it relates to women who are incarcerated. The legislation proposals provide specifically to female inmates the availability of simple
women's hygiene products,
health care, screening, mentorship, and other social service and trauma and informed issues that they should be should be availed to them, so to speak.
And we're getting close to the end of the time that we've got. Let me just ask, what about life without parole?
Specifically,
well, that's on the agenda too,
yes,
right? We want life without parole to be restricted
some
way.
Yes,
it's called death by incarceration in a more pejorative form, but
right,
yeah,
and that's another one of the bills that were we went out to Harrisburg in October to look to talk with the state legislators in supporting. There were 4 in essence, and that was one of them.
Well, and that locks the incarceration in for life. I mean, basically, it's a death sentence.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was actually the impetus for us going to Harrisburg was that very bill, the CABI, the Coalition Against Death by Incarceration, which was one of the organizations that we worked with, and there was a rally on October 23rd. Relative to,
and we're not saying there shouldn't be necessarily life without parole. We're just saying it shouldn't be so indiscriminately applied, and there should be some flexibility for the experts in the system, including the courts, to be able to back off on that life without parole.
Absolutely,
I think it should be reserved for the most heinous crimes. And I think a lot of actions that somebody will do, you know, when they're 16, 17, 19, 20, you know, they become different people. And the studies show
absolutely.
That we. Yeah. Age out of our aberrant behavior, our criminal behavior. It just happens, you know.
And naturally, I mean, you know, you get to a point. I mean, I've become laid back in a way I never thought it could, you know, possible.
Right.
You know, at 61, you know,
we change.
We change.
Hey, if I could just say one thing, do we have a couple more minutes?
No, we have about 10 seconds.
Oh, all right.
Well, we're running out of time. Noting that we just have a few seconds left, I want to thank both Marvin Boyer and Ed Angelo for joining me on the show. Thanks for the leadership that you're providing in the Color of Justice effort. Those of you out there who care about this issue, you should get in touch with us. You can do that by emailing Marvin. You'll give your email out.
Well, my email is mblguide2@gmail.com. Feel free to contact me if you have any questions.
In this fight, join us.
And my email is angelolaw@comcast.net. I'd be happy to hear from anyone who wants to get involved.
And I'm in the phone book, so if you're interested, be in touch. And thanks for joining us. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Thanks to Ed Angelo and Marvin Boyer.
Thank you,
Have a great
Alan.
Evening.
Thanks, Alan.